So good morning. Thank you so much and welcome to Glide. My name is Marvin K. White. I'm your interim minister of celebration. I want to introduce you to the folks that make this celebration happen. We have Curly, Moya, and Steve. Dan, David, on lights and Betty, on lights and sound. They're really amazing. If you turn over here to Haruko, you can wave to the rest of the world through our live stream camera. Oh, come on now. Wave to the rest of the world. We also have the Change Band today under the direction of Roscoe. Our celebration host for the day is the Reverend Right Dr. William Page. Did y'all hear that? That's the Glide Ensemble. Please give it up. We have an amazing celebration planned with you in mind. What we'd like you to do right now is grab a hand of someone standing next to you. Let's get all connected up. Because I just looked and I see that our founding president, Janice Mirkatani, is in the house. And the man, the myth, the legend, the very real living history that continues to propel us into liberation, the Reverend Dr. Cecil Williams is here today. So that makes this connection even more important, to grab a hand, because what flows through Jan and Cecil, if we're all connected, will make its way to you as well. And we will really be a justice community. So Jonah's gonna lead us in prayer.
Namaste.
Everybody, please remain standing as we sing This Little Light of Mine.
Shine.
shine. Everybody to hug at least 5 people. All right, go for it.
Thank you. You may be seated. Let's hear from San Francisco's musical treasure, the Glide Ensemble.
Lord, you are my joy, you're my salvation, whom shall I fear?
Hello, everybody. Once again, everyone, Dennis Hersey and the Glide Ensemble. So it is time for Glide Kids. Glide Kids is where we have our children come together, say a short prayer. But also to have fellowship with each other and to be in community with each other. And so Laurel is over here on the side in the shawl. Please meet Laurel. She will take the kids upstairs. If this is your first time, be sure to sign in your child and then pick them up at the end of celebration. They'll be up on the fourth floor. Now's the time in our celebration where we ask a member of this community to share their story. And in sharing the stories, we find that we are not so different. We're all on a journey, and our journeys are far more similar than they are different. And today, we have the honor of having Winnie Fink come before us to share her story. And Winnie is part of Bridging the Divide. And I want to thank that team because they are doing the work to literally bridge the gap of the divide in this country and in our communities where we're so separated. Everything in this world takes work. And Winnie, I thank you for doing the work. So come on up. Winnie Fink, everyone.
Good morning, Glide family. Good morning. I said at the 9 o'clock, I tried to, I'm always so amazed when people come up and just speak and there's nothing in their hand. And I tried, and I was rehearsing, I said to my partner, I feel like I should do it without. She goes, well, maybe you could have an outline. No, no outline. You know what? It takes all of us, right? This is me. All right. As was true for many of us, I couldn't sleep the night of the 2016 presidential election. While I believed it was going to be closer than many of my people did, I didn't think it was going to turn out like it did. So as I lay awake that night, despairing, I was thinking of my people in Southeast Kansas, where I grew up, and just thinking, how could they have voted for that man? Of course, I didn't really know how they voted. That's how I was dealing with my personal pain of the whole thing, is attributing it to those folks who raised me, who made me who I am. When I got out of bed the day after, I knew I needed to get to church. I first walked through the doors of Glide in 1998. My sister had attended, and she said, you have got to come with me to Sunday Celebration. It's a Methodist church. I'm like, no, whatever. Okay. Well, see, we're fourth generation United Methodists, so I knew what that was. And my great-grandparents helped build their little rural one-room church. My aunt was a Methodist pastor. My grandmother was the first woman on her board of trustees. We went every Sunday to Sunday school and church and sat on the fifth row pew of my extended family. So I knew what that was. In my childhood church, it was a friendly place. Community service was this thing about sending money to some faraway place and showing up teaching Sunday school on occasion. Very nice, safe foundation. And then in early high school, things changed. It turns out I am a big old butch. True. And as the vice president of my very active youth group, I fell in love with the president. And you know that utter joy of first love? It was just seeping out of me. And while I could not name it, would not name it, no way, no how, it couldn't be tamped down. And it got so intense that it just caused my family, me, others. It was uncomfortable enough that I just needed to stop being so active in the church. So I stepped away and then finally came out to myself a few years later and immediately became an out dyke, a strong feminist. I had a great community that really pushed me to look at my white and class privilege and start to think what I bring, what I carry. With this new lens, I started to examine my personal and family history, and I was confounded by this church thing, this cornerstone of my growing up. Can church be more than just a friendly enough place? Can it do the radical teaching of Jesus? Can I find a place that's going to embrace my butchness? That's a true agent of change. Be a true agent of change. Be a place of connection and not be so damn white. That was an impossible list, impossible. And then I walked in here 20-plus years ago. I was blown away. This was the place I'd been dreaming about. I began attending every couple to 3 to 3 months. I became a monthly pledger. I served some meals. I tutored a kid for a semester. But I was slinking around the edges because I was afraid. I was afraid of what I saw in this performance up on the stage and with the choir and all that goes on up here, that it wasn't real. And that what was really happening downstairs or elsewhere wasn't going to live up to what I saw. So I wanted to keep it distant because the fear of the disappointment was too great. Then the election. And my soul needed connection, and Glide was the only place I could think of. So I came back. I came 3 weeks in a row. And on the third week, Chris Collins stood up here and made a call for a new group he was starting called Bridging the Divide. So I was like, yeah, I can go talk to some right-aligned folk. I can bring them to the light. I'm up to that challenge. I can do that. In reality, bridging the divide is a space that lets us talk to each other in a way that we can't in our day-to-day lives. We promise everyone who walks in the room makes the pledge to each other to listen. We look each other in the eye and we engage. And for me, it's become about shift. And most importantly, how I can shift. One of the first shifts is stepping towards glide in a more real way. Shift can be about major life events. It can be big and bold, but really, usually shift is small and almost imperceptible. It's like probably how your tails are feeling right now in those seats, shifting on, wanting to shift them on those hardwood, right? It's the shift to get up and go across the room or to take a different route home. One of the most important shifts is just to simply pause as we're in space with others and think about how what's happening someone else is feeling and taking in differently and probably in a way you could never experience because of whatever they brought to the table. That small sort of shift is something we all can do. The practice of making one daily shift towards someone else makes me an enormously more compassionate and better human. And it makes life a lot more fulfilling and enjoyable. I invite you to get on Bridging the Divide's email list. That's how we communicate with folks. We do events here. We're doing a bunch of events right now in Oakland because we're having an easier time getting conservatives to show up and talk with us there. Go to glide.org/bridgingthedivide. We welcome you. I am Winnie, and I am Glide.
Thank you, Winnie. Thank you for the work that you do here at Glide. Thank you for being you. Now's the time in the celebration where we're going to humbly ask you to give. The cornerstone of this church says a house of prayer for all people. But Glide is also a beacon of light and hope and meals and housing and education and recovery. The list goes on and on and on of what we are able to do as a community here at Glide. Glide is not only a church, but it is a foundation. You have the opportunity to direct your gift by virtue of envelopes in the pews, but I ask you, put your money to work today to help people here in San Francisco, and thank you very much. Thank you. Thank you again to the Changed Band. We will hear one more song from the Glide Ensemble. And after that, we will hear from our speaker of the day. And our speaker of the day is the senior director for the Center of Social Justice here at Glide, Miguel Bustos. Miguel Bustos' life is a life of service, both here in the city of San Francisco, at the state level, and at the federal level under the presidency of Bill Clinton and the vice presidency of Al Gore. He looks to expand opportunities for justice and social justice here by increasing volunteerism, internships, and partnerships so that we can have a positive impact on the city and county of San Francisco. And I would like to thank Miguel. I would like to thank Miguel because oftentimes in life they're rising stars and they just keep rising. But it takes a special person to come back to the city where he was born in the Mission District and to do the work on the ground to make a difference in the lives of people. Thank you, Miguel. We will hear from Miguel after the next song from the Glide Ensemble.
God is my witness, protection.
Charles Houston. Charles Houston, everyone.
So today is a special day. Along with you being here, today is the birthday of someone special. His name was Cesar Chavez. He was born March 31st, 1927, and was a labor leader along with the co-founder, Dolores Huerta, when they founded the United Farm Workers in 1962. So I ask you, bear with me, because I want you to see a 3-minute clip of the story of the United Farm Workers.
23,000 acres of some of the most productive farmland on the planet. In the 1960s, while the agricultural companies that owned the land became wealthy, tens of thousands of farm laborers who worked the land remained desperately poor.
These were inhumane conditions. They were un-American conditions. They were conditions that relegated these farm workers to the lowest workers in the whole country.
Most were Mexican Americans who could neither read nor write. Most would die by the age of 49. And to most of the country, they were invisible.
Every time we sit at the table to have something to eat, the fruit and the vegetables got there because someone was exploited. They're subjected to the sun and to the heat and to the cold and to pesticide poisoning. They're treated like animals. And they endure all the sacrifices and all the suffering so you can eat and I can eat. These men and women and children feed all of us, and they don't have any food for themselves. And we're going to change it. It's going to be changed.
Cesar Chavez was the second of six children, born into a devout Catholic family on a modest ranch in Yuma, Arizona. They lost the ranch during the Great Depression and were soon forced to enter the backbreaking world of migrant labor. Traveling across California, taking whatever work they could find, the Chavez children passed through 37 schools in 3 years. Cesar dropped out at the age of 14 to work full-time in the fields.
What was amazing about Cesar is that he was almost entirely and completely self-possessed. He never got past the eighth grade, and yet he was brilliant.
After a stint in the Navy, Chavez worked for the CSO, the Community Service Organization, a group dedicated to improving the lives of Mexican Americans. There, he met someone who shared his passion for justice, a 28-year-old former school teacher from Stockton, California, Dolores Huerta.
In the school where I was teaching, there were a lot of malnutrition to children. So I went to my principal and I said, you know, these kids, you're obviously very hungry. Can I get a voucher for shoes, free lunch for these kids? And his response was, their parents, all they do is drink up all their money. I knew he was wrong.
A frustrated Huerta had quit her teaching job to join the CSO. At a meeting in San Francisco in 1962, Cesar Chavez approached her with an idea that would alter the course of their lives.
He said, you and I have to organize a union. And then he said, but we will not see a national union in our lifetime. And I said, why? He said, because the girls are too rich, they're too powerful, and they're too racist.
Too rich, too powerful, and too racist. Thank God that Cesar Chavez and Dolores Huerta lived to see the creation of a national farm worker movement and created the UFW. On April 23rd, 1993, Cesar Chavez died in Arizona. He died in his sleep. He was there to help some of the Filipino and Mexican farm workers who were being sued by some of the growers. A few days after, I traveled with my University Chicano Studies professor, Yolanda Ronquillo, to Delano, California, to attend the funeral. We arrived that night after we set up. It was like camping all around, and we all headed to the main tent. The tent was basically the sanctuary that was created. It was in that tent that Cesar Chavez lied in his coffin, a very simple wooden pine coffin that his brother had made. The handles of the coffin were actually ropes that were tied in knots from the inside so that the pallbearers could carry the caskets. We woke up the next morning and it was amazing to see so many people of every color, of every faith, all in white, sharing coffee, sharing snacks. For 24 hours, there was a rosary going on. Everyone took turns standing guard. I remember when it was my turn, I stood to the left of the coffin, and I stood there and I just watched so many faces of humble farm workers whose lives were changed because of the act of Cesar and Dolores. They had come to say farewell to their brother and their leader. Many of those faces looked like my relatives. You see, my dad came in the 1950s to work the same fields that Cesar so worked hard to work to help the farm workers. That night, we fell asleep to the meditative flow of the rosary being said throughout the night. There was a phrase that came out of the United Farm Worker Movement, si se puede. It means, yes, it can be done. And that chant has become a solidarity chant for the struggles of so many people in the community. Because remember what they said, too rich, too powerful, and too racist. But it was si se puede that changed all that. Often I think about the struggles that Cesar Chavez and Dolores were facing. And you know what? He said it wouldn't happen in our lifetime. But when you build a movement, sometimes you will not reap the benefits of your labor. But you know that one day someone will. Si se puede. If you ever have gone to Europe and have gone into those churches, those magnificent buildings, the architects and the patrons who envisioned these structures never stepped foot in them. I remember being in Barcelona, going to the Cathedral of the Holy Cross, and I was on top of the roof, and the tour guide said, well, the groundbreaking of this church happened in 1298, and it was completed in 1913, 615 years later. Imagine how many si se puedes that the architects, the construction workers, had to tell themselves when they started working and doing this building because they never got to see it. They didn't get overwhelmed, though, with the obstacles of never being able to pray in those buildings. No, they stayed focused on their vision. They acted in their time for the benefit of the future. For Cesar Chavez and Dolores Huerta, they saw injustice in all people. They saw oppression in everyone. Well, they didn't know where the future would lead them, but they acted and they began the impossible and they achieved it. They organized farm workers. They took the risk. Cesar Chavez and Dolores had kids, had families. They quit their jobs and they took the risks to build a movement. When you see injustice, you call it out. You may have a voice and you may have conviction, but if you don't stand, it's worthless because there are other people who don't have that. Similar to what happened here in 1963 when Reverend Cecil Williams and Janice came, they took the risk. Sometimes it can be overwhelming and over the top. I'm sure that Jan and Cecil had many times when they looked at each other and tried to reassure themselves that, yeah, si se puede. Well, today we're facing another si se puede moment. Well, with all that is going on in the world, what do we do next? We're dealing with people that, as we heard, are too rich, too powerful, and too racist. In June of 2015, when Trump launched his campaign for president, he said, they're not sending their best. They're sending the people with lots of problems, and they're bringing those problems to us. They're bringing drugs, they're bringing crime, they're rapists. Well, I actually thought he was talking about the convicts and the political prisoners that the English sent back in the 1600s here. I didn't know he was talking about us. Where is our si se puede moment today? Our country's past is soiled with the genocide of Native Americans when it began in 1492, and whose community still suffers today. 2 weeks ago, members of GLIDE's Center for Social Justice and members of The Kitchen, who I know are sitting here today, we went through to Alabama to a pilgrimage. There we saw how the remnants of slavery still continues today with mass incarceration of our young black brothers and sisters. Recently, we did a day of remembrance where we acknowledged what happened with the United States when it forced Japanese Americans into internment camps during World War II. Today, we're hearing about Muslim bans. We're hearing about transgender discrimination. And we have a bunch of white supremacists yelling, Jews will not replace us. Today, we have children and families being torn apart at the border. They're leaving countries in turmoil that the United States created in the 60s and 70s. We see it today in our own city, in our own region, where disparities is growing broader and more separated between those who have and those who have not. There's enough there to just make you want to just crawl up into a cave and not come out. But it's during these times that I say we need to find what were the ingredients of Si Se Puede. What gave them the courage, the discipline, and the risk-taking spirit to say it and to do it? Well, in the Center of Social Justice, we're looking at what we're going to do. You know, Cesar Chavez and Dolores took a group of people from a march from Delano to Sacramento. Well, you know what? There's so much going on that we may have to do the same thing. Get a busload of Glide folks like all of you, and let's go tell people what's really going on. We have to stay focused, and we have to keep marching. So there's five ingredients that I picked. One, that Cesar Chavez and Dolores Huerta believed in family and community. Both came from large, you know, families. Some given and some chosen, just like here, just like Glide. We have family members that are chosen, that are given, but we care and we love. We are a community that embraces unconditional love and radical inclusivity. Second thing, they had faith. Both had faith that gave them courage during tense and difficult moments. Both Cesar Chavez and Dolores Huerta were Roman Catholics. And actually during one of the fasts that Cesar had, it was 25 days long, the only thing he ate was a communion wafer. And there was an image you saw earlier of Bobby Kennedy and him sharing that communion. But he said, I quote, "Our struggle is not easy. Those who oppress our cause are rich and powerful, and they have many allies in high places. We are poor. Our allies are few. But we have something the rich do not. We have our bodies, spirits, and justice of cause as our weapons." And just like Dr. Martin Luther King, Cesar Chavez and Dolores Huerta knew that the Creator did not want to have their people oppressed. There was greater things for people. The third thing, inner strength. Both got their inner strength from their mothers. So men, pay attention. Women, rock. And when you ask Dolores, who thank God is still with us today and still organizing, still marching, still knocking on doors, if you ask her if she's doing incredible work, she said, "I'm just an ordinary person doing extraordinary things," which is a challenge to all of us. The fourth thing that they believed in, nonviolence. Cesar Chavez and Dolores Huerta knew that the only way to outsmart these rich, powerful, and racist people is to stand and to nonviolently walk towards justice. They told their supporters, "If you believe that human beings deserve dignity, then you would never hurt anyone." They didn't mean that the farm workers and their allies should be passive. No. They believed that we needed to be a voice, that we shouldn't stand on the sidelines, but we should shout out for justice. And they kept to their beliefs. One time during one of the organizing meetings, Cesar Chavez told one of the organizers, he was upset. He said, "If there is violence, it's your fault, because it's a failure of creative intelligence." Imagine that. It's a failure of creative intelligence. I have come to believe that violence and fighting may satisfy my ego, but it doesn't solve anything. As Barbara Lee, our congresswoman, says, "Let us not become the evil we deplore." And the fifth and final thing that they had was vision. Just as Dr. King said on April 3rd, 1968, he said, we've got some difficult days ahead, but it doesn't matter to me now because I've seen the mountaintop and I don't mind. Like anybody, I'd like to live a long life because longevity has its place. But I'm not concerned about that now. I just want to do God's will. And he's allowed me to go to the mountaintop and to look over. I've seen the promised land. I may not be there with you, but I want you to know tonight that we as a people will get to that promised land. And I'm happy tonight. I am not worried about anything. I am not fearful of any man. Mine eyes have seen the glory of the coming of the Lord. Dr. King. So where is our CSIP weather in our lives? It's here. It's in you. It's in me. I refuse to live my days fighting. I would rather see my days building a beloved community with all of you. I would rather be a creative genius than a fighting coward. Why? Because it brings me joy. It lifts my soul. It brings me closer to you, my community, and it brings me closer to my Maker. Yes, let us build rather than fight. And just like any artist does, or any composer, before they're about to start a new project, they pick up that paintbrush, they pick up that pencil, and they take that leap. I truly believe that you and I together, we can build that beloved community. I'm gonna end with the prayer that Mother Teresa would say. I used to pray that God would feed the hungry or to do this and that, but now I pray that he give me whatever I need. What am I supposed to do? What I can do. I used to pray for answers, but now I'm praying for strength. I used to believe that prayer changed things, but now I know that prayer changes us and we change things. Si se puede. Si se puede, si se puede.
Ladies and gentlemen, one more time for Miguel Bustos. We would love to give you the opportunity to join GLIDE if you're not a member of GLIDE. You can go to the through the door on my right to room 201, the Maya Angelou living room. And a brother or sister will be there to welcome you into this community. Now we'll have the benediction from Marvin K. White.
Hello. I love Si Se Puede. Yes, it can be done. So all of the evil and all of the oppression in the world, that can be done and over with. Yes, it can be done. It can be over. But then there's also, what if you're only one brick away from the completion of your temple? That can be done too. That's why I love church, because we can say, this is going to be over soon, and what we actually came here to do is going to come through, and we don't even have a choice in it. So come on back next week and give the report about how good your life is, because you came by here first. We'll see you next week.
Everybody, we're getting ready to sing We Shall Overcome today. So grab the hand of whoever's near you as we sing. We shall overcome.